the supervisors is now in session. Angela, would you please lead us in?
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I'd like to take a moment of silence for our Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who passed away early this morning. Thank you. Chaplain?
Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, it's a new year and new things to look forward to. My prayer would be for each individual and groups and county organizations, give them a vision for what can happen in the new year. Give them a vision for encouraging the people that they serve in this county. We appreciate all who do that serving. Then, Father, we would just take time now to remember Doug LaMalfa. We pray for his family and this moment of loss for them, unexpected. Father, we pray that they find peace in the days that are ahead. We pray for those constituents who have voted for him in his long, many years of service. How grateful we are. How blessed we have been for his commitment to this county in Washington, D.C. God, we lift him up today. We lift up his family and close friends, all who have worked with him as they begin to receive the news. Father, give us peace in our hearts. Give us understanding. Give us encouragement by the life that he lived. In Jesus' name, amen.
Little announcement here first. The board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, Siskiyou Power Authority, County Service Area 3, County Service Area 4, and In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority, and receives no additional compensation. And I saw that Supervisor Valenzuela is here. Supervisor Help.
Present.
Supervisor Harris.
Present.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Here.
And Supervisor Okren.
Present. We'll move on to item 4, Board of Supervisors request, County Clerk, Board of Supervisors.
This would be our election of chair and vice chair for this year.
I would motion to Supervisor Help as chair and Supervisor Harris as vice chair.
Second.
And did we have a second? Oh, thank you. All righty. Supervisor Health?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Okren?
Aye.
And shall we wait a minute for Mr. Valenzuela? Make sure.
Say aye.
Aye.
All right. So 5-0. So we have a chair and a vice chair now.
Yeah. Okay. Not too long.
And then the next is to grant officials permission to leave the state of California and the U.S. during 2026.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
And Supervisor Okren?
Aye.
That will take a quick break so we can shuffle around. We'll be back in 5-ish minutes.
Item 5, presentations from the public. Thanks a lot for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on the matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Any comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk and addressing the board. Please state your name for the record. Prior to providing your comments, and please address the board as a whole through the chair. That's my point. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. We don't have any.
No blue cards.
Any comment in house? Comment online?
Showing none online.
Okay. Moving on to consent agenda, item six.
That was in Frank?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any others?
I move to approve the balance of the consent agenda.
Second.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogrin?
Aye.
Supervisor Kinsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
And Supervisor Hal?
Aye.
For the concept.
6F. Anybody here? Can we push it to somebody later so that they come? I've just got a question with regard to there's an allocation on this for a community-based organization, and I need to know who that will be. It's like $28,000. It will go to whoever that is, but it doesn't indicate that.
Through the chair and to the Davis County Administrator, I will make contact with the department head and have them respond.
Thank you.
And bring this back. Item 7A, public request, and North Coast Regional Quality Control Board.
Morning. Can you hear me?
You can lift that if there's a little button.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Somebody gets trash.
I think that probably works. Good morning, supervisors. My name is Eli Scott. I'm with the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. I'm a senior environmental scientist. This is my colleague, Brent Sullivan. Today, I'm going to be talking about the development of water quality regulations for commercial agriculture in the Scott and Shasta watersheds that we've been developing for the last few years. Slide, please. Thank you. So I'll be going to talk about the present thinking on the draft order that we've been developing and seek feedback. Also going to give a review of our past program of implementation, the order development we've done to date, some upcoming public outreach opportunities for folks to come and ask us questions and give some more information, and then our general timeline to adoption. Thank you. So I want to first talk about total maximum daily loads. I know a lot of folks here probably already know quite a bit about that, but just for those who don't, total maximum daily loads are essentially the maximum amount of a pollutant that a water body can process in one day. When the Clean Water Act finds waters to be polluted, it's required that TMDLs are developed for those pollutants. And at the regional board, our requirement under that law is to develop a plan to clean those waters up. Also, those responsible for pollution have the responsibility to follow that plan in Scott and Shasta. These particular plans are meant to span 40 years following their approval by the EPA. So to go over what that timeline currently looks like, Scott is federally listed as impaired for sediment, temperature, and biostimulatory conditions. Biostimulatory conditions are the conditions that lead toward nuisance algae growth. It was listed as impaired for sediment in 1992, for temperature in 1998, and then biostimulatory conditions in 2012. We developed TMDLs, we being the Regional Water Board, for sediment temperature and adopted them on December 7th, 2005. They were subsequently approved by the EPA on September 8th of 2006. Over in the Shasta, it's listed as impaired for temperature and dissolved oxygen. The dissolved oxygen impairment occurred in 1992, temperature in 1994, and the TMDLs were developed by the Regional Water Board and adopted on June 29, 2006, and then approved by the EPA in 2007. So the overall water quality timeline, I'm going to go back all the way to 2001. Agriculture used to be exempt from regulation under waste discharge requirements in California, and that changed in 2001 when it was then subject to that regulation. Again, the temperature and sediment TMDLs were approved in 2006, and the first Scott waiver, which is a permit to waiver waste discharge requirements, this permit for discharge was adopted in 2006. In 2007, Shasta TMDLs were adopted, and the first Shasta waiver, which also regulates those discharges of waste, was adopted. In 2010, we initiated our regional ag land discharge program, which formed a stakeholder advisory group, which some folks from Siskiyou County were on. In 2012, we updated the Scott and Shasta waivers to make them a little bit more stringent. We had an attachment that had sort of recommended best practices. We then updated them again in 2018, where those best practices became conditions of the waivers permit itself. We renewed the 2018 waivers in 2023 and began WDR development, waste discharge requirement development. And then once again in 2005, when we realized we needed to extend the timeline a little bit more, we readopted this. Sorry, I should say we renewed the 2018 waivers. Those 2018 waivers are the current permit that is regulating discharges of waste in the Scott and Shasta. So those waivers have been around for 20 years. They were first adopted soon after the TMDL, like I've already reiterated. The most recent iteration was the 2018 iteration, really focused on encouraging voluntary actions, but providing an enforceable backstop for an authorized discharge. We have taken an active on-the-ground approach where we've been face-to-face with landowners, done branch assessments on their property, provided recommendations, and if they needed to, had them develop plans to control existing discharges of waste and also monitor how well those plans are working. And it was really a staff-driven prioritization where we focus on large land holdings where we could optimize the amount of staff time we move out there for the largest length of stream possible. We've looked at about 33% of the streams in both watersheds, so there's still quite a bit of work to do. And because there's no enrollment in the waiver, because it's a staff-driven approach, there are no fees associated with it. It also comes with a pretty highly tailored monitoring and reporting approach. Based off of our observations in the field, we develop monitoring requirements for each individual landowner. So it's a very staff-heavy approach, and it's more streamlined, essentially, more inclusive. Next slide. So the waivers really served as an introduction to water quality for folks out here and sort of what we need to see according to the TMDL. The 2018 waiver did describe in finding 18 the potential development of general waste discharge requirements, and by developing a program that's more like other programs for irrigated agriculture across the state. That waiver was pretty quickly petitioned by interested parties challenging compliance with statewide policies and precedents. The State Water Board did end up taking up that petition on their own motion. They didn't act on it. We believe that's because we said in finding 18 that we would develop a program that's more like other programs in the state. But the fact that they took it up on their own motion tells us that they would like to see more changes. Moving to general waste discharge requirements allows us to ensure that we can be compliant with those statewide precedents and the existing precedents of the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, which came out of the East San Joaquin Order. And it also provides a more efficient and comprehensive implementation because we will be requiring enrollment. We can also build a framework for watershed scale monitoring and reporting through coalitions. I'll talk a little bit more about coalitions in the future. Next slide. And I'll talk about water development. So we formed two internal teams in the fall of 2023 to kick off the development of these permits. One was a technical team, which was looking at BMP effectiveness, data analysis, TMDL concepts that we need to pay attention to, monitoring approaches, those sorts of things. And we also developed a regulatory team that focused more on the legal side of it, what regulatory requirements we need to meet, a legal analysis of the existing program and a potential future program. We also coordinated with the Division of Water Rights, understanding with the emergency regulations, there was likely some attention we need to pay to that. We wanted to make sure that we came out with an enforceable order. So we met in the beginning of fall of 2023 through spring of 2025 to build those initial core regulatory concepts. And then on a parallel track slide, we also started our external process with tribal consultation beginning on December 12th, 2024. We had some informal face-to-face tribal outreach with the Karuk Tribe and Quartz Valley Indian Reservation. In January of 2025, had our public EIR scoping for CEQA. In February of 2025, and then convened our first technical advisory group later that month. And that technical advisory group was a fairly diverse set of interested parties. Next slide, please. include ag producers, tribes, irrigators, the Farm Bureau, Siskiyou County staff, mostly Matt Parker, so we can keep Sigma sort of within scope, environmental groups, including Friends of the Shasta River, restoration practitioners like the Scott River Watershed Council and Caltrout. We're doing work on the ground with ranchers, technical consultants, including LWA, again, to understand how this would dovetail with groundwater, CDFW, Division of Water Rights. So a lot of folks, some pretty tense meetings sometimes, but we thought it was important to get everyone in the same room looking face-to-face as much as possible and talk through some of the hard issues that we know would come up. So now I'll go into some of the working details and concepts that we've come out with. First, I want to start with the enrollment criteria. So this is what would require someone to enroll in the program. First, we're contemplating a basically minimum acres threshold. So people with X number of acres or above would need to enroll to sort of ensure that we're capturing the right population of agricultural producers. Or if agricultural activities occur adjacent to or within the riparian zone or designated wetlands, those folks would need to enroll. Or if they're a member of an irrigation district, recognizing that irrigation practices can sometimes result from discharges of tailwater and impacts to other people, water quality factors. Or if their method of irrigation results in discharges to waters of the state. The reason for the last two, I just want to give a little bit of nuance here. Some of the larger irrigation districts contain a whole lot of people, and those who have the discharge of tailwater to surface waters sometimes don't control how much water comes onto their property. They just receive the water from up ditch irrigators. So bringing in the irrigation district level sort of focuses on the community side of that issue and ensure that people are working together to control those discharges. I've been on some pretty small parcels and I can't see the fairness in being like, you're responsible for all the water coming off your property when they can't really control how much is coming off. So next slide. Some other things we're thinking about are some prohibitions. This is really to put guardrails on certain activities. So we want to ensure that there's no discharge of tailwater unless the quality of that water is compliant with the TMDL load allocations in the Shasta or the temperature policy in the basin plan. That means those discharges of tailwaters can't raise receiving water temperatures more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit or affect beneficial uses. We don't want to see any riparian grazing conducted without an approved riparian grazing plan. Want to make sure that that the best management practices that are done through riparian grazing, which can be beneficial, are done in a way that everyone's on the same page about. And no tillage within 35 feet of the waterside edge of the water course, which we consider really that core riparian zone. Doesn't mean agriculture can't go on there, but we don't want to see land disturbance within that core riparian zone. Next slide. What this looks like for folks on the ground is we'll have certain conditions in the permit that describe how we want to see water quality threats controlled, essentially. So there'll be conditions around riparian health and management, conditions around management storage of chemicals and fertilizers, management around road maintenance, because a lot of the sediment issues in the Scott are upland roads, and there are some large ranches that have some upland roads, management of ag infrastructure and irrigation practices. All of those will be looked at in a farm evaluation where go out with a landowner, compare what's on the ground to those conditions, and where conditions don't match the conditions on the ground don't match permit conditions, we'd identify a water quality threat, which then needs to be addressed through plan. Next slide. So when a water quality threat's identified, we move into sort of this adaptive management cycle where a management plan needs to be prepared or if it exists, modified. To address that water quality threat, then that management plan will propose certain BMPs to be applied on the landscape, which once it's approved, they will be applied and then monitored for effectiveness. If that monitoring shows they're being effective and they're controlling the water quality threats, right, kind of break out of this adaptive management cycle. If not, then there still exists a water quality threat that needs to be addressed. So the management plan needs to be modified, BMPs modified, and effectiveness monitored. So agricultural water quality management plan is the planning document. It has multiple elements. Not all of those elements are going to need to be there for every person. It's going to really depend on what water quality threats are identified. So there will be a module sort of for riparian areas, for irrigation if it results in tailwater, road management, agricultural infrastructure, and how that's managed on the landscape. Adaptive management, how they're going to perform that and triggers And then an in-stream work plan, and the purpose for that is there are some best management practices that require a working stream. And generally, someone would have to go and get a whole other permit from us for that, and we don't think that should be necessary in this. It should be covered by the permit we're developing. So that in-stream work plan would cover those in-stream practices. We'll sort of have a line out of certain BMPs that we think and have seen are to be effective, like rocking paddle crossings, that sort of thing. So, slide. A little bit more on coalitions. Enrollees can either join coalitions or they can enroll individually. The job of a coalition is to collect fees, to manage communication between enrollees and the State Board and the North Coast Water Board, develop outreach and education material for enrollees that need a little bit more support to implement these practices on the ground, and then also implement the monitoring and reporting program so that no longer falls on the landowner. It would be something that the coalition takes care of. Of course, if someone doesn't join a coalition and doesn't enroll individually, they would be responsible for these things.
Who's the coalition?
Coalition is, will basically will spring up. The way that process works is there will be a way for coalitions to apply to us and show us that they can manage it. Right now, we've been talking with the Farm Bureau, and they're considering being coalition with support from LWA.
Do you have to be a landowner or to be a member?
No, you could be an operator.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I'm going to pass that to Brennan a little bit more about this topic. But let me just hit one last point, which is that when you enroll in a coalition, you get significantly reduced fees to the State Board, and we don't control those fees. That's within the State Board's fee branch, and we've already facilitated a meeting with the Farm Bureau and the fee branch so they can discuss how this program may or may not fit into the existing fee schedule and if some separate fee schedule.
So are you saying the Farm Bureau is in support of fees?
I don't think they're in support of it, but I think it is just one of those things that comes with this sort of program.
But I thought you said earlier in the presentation there were no fees.
The current program does not have fees.
And why would it require fees now?
Moving to a general waste discharge requirement type program, and even if we move to a waiver, we want to have enrollment so we can get as wide a coverage as possible. When you have enrollment, fees come with that. So I'm going to pass it over to Brenna to field the question about coalitions and then also go into her section.
Okay, supervisors, my name is Brenna Sullivan. Yeah, just to add a little bit to what Eli was saying about coalitions. So these types of programs exist elsewhere in the state, and coalitions are usually formed by groups of growers themselves. So in other, like in the Central Valley, it's common to have farm bureaus form these coalitions. Sometimes they can be resource conservation districts. Sometimes they're irrigation districts. But kind of a common theme in them is that they are run themselves by groups of growers. And they're usually open to anyone who's enrolled in one of these programs. So whether you're an owner, an operator, you know, a corporation, those types of entities are all available. But are all allowed to enroll in a coalition. And coalitions can be, again, NGOs, grower coalitions, really any group that steps forward.
And yet they would be ones collecting the fees?
Well, the way that these
programs, tell me how that works.
Yeah, so the way that these programs work, this style of program has been implemented in the state for the last 20 years, and the state itself sets the fees. And they allow that if a grower enrolls through a coalition, they have a lower fee through that coalition because the coalition is managing the membership, the fee collection. So that task that's usually on the regional water boards is now tasked with the coalition. It's a much, much smaller fee.
What's in it for them?
For the coalition? They, because it's a grower coalition, usually they form a intermediary between the grower and the regulating agency. So as a grower, they get to report their information to that coalition, and the coalition manages that information that gets then reported to the state agency. So there's some information like identifying personal information, owner name, that type of information gets retained with the coalition and does not get reported to the regulating agency.
Does the coalition get a percentage of that fee? Is there something in it for the coalition?
Yeah, the coalition usually charges an administration fee. The way that it usually works with farm bureaus is that they will charge a lower fee to their member and another fee to folks that aren't members of the Farm Bureau. It doesn't have to be the Farm Bureau that forms a coalition. There can be multiple coalitions that form. And that's the case in other areas of the state where maybe in one area the Farm Bureau forms a coalition and in another area it's the irrigation district. And in this situation, we would be open to multiple coalitions forming, one coalition forming. There's a lot of flexibility in how it ends up looking out.
Why is there even a need for a coalition?
Well,
you're an agency that's supposed to be implementing regulation. Why wouldn't the agency do that?
The agency can do that. It is an option for growers to enroll through a coalition. Across the state, usually in these programs, 95% of growers will choose to enroll through a coalition because of the benefits to the grower themselves. They might not want their information, like the parcel number, their name, that sort of identifying information to be public. When information is submitted to us, because we're a public agency, that information becomes public. So that is a big benefit to having a coalition, is that some of that information lives with a coalition and it's not discoverable by public disclosure. So that's one benefit. The other benefit comes from the state structure itself. And that's not something that we as a regional water board have much control over. The state sets the fee schedule and they charge a much lower fee for growers in the coalition, much, much lower.
They've been hearing incorrectly, keep going back and forth. You said that the coalitions are growers, but you also said they're NGOs too.
They can be NGOs, right?
Well, it's not mixed up.
Well, our program would not limit any certain type of entity to form a coalition. It could be a grower coalition, like a Farm Bureau that is run by a board of directors that are primarily growers. We would allow for that. It could be another type of entity that forms. It could be an existing entity that's already out there and wants to apply.
If a group of NGOs got together and formed a coalition, what would be their purpose if they're not growers?
Well, they might be better positioned to implement some of the monitoring reporting requirements, but ultimately it's the growers themselves who decide whether they want to enroll in the coalition. So if a coalition was formed that the producers don't think is in their best interest to join, they don't have to join that coalition. They can join another one or form their own or form another one that, you know, is that comes up later. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility in how this gets implemented with respect to coalitions.
So with what you said, given a coalition in a different geographic location affect another?
So, indirectly, this order right now, as it's currently drafted, would require some measure of representative or regional scale monitoring. So I say indirectly because there may be economies of scale in combining regional monitoring efforts that might be easier under one coalition or fewer coalitions. And so if there are parsed out coalitions, you know, across the landscape, it would probably be better for the economy of scale for them to figure out how to work together in a way. And it's common that there is usually one coalition that covers a broad geographic area for that purpose.
You see where I'm going is it just appears to me that one could set up another bureaucratic entity between the state and the growers.
Yeah.
It's pretty problematic.
I understand that concern. Again, it's up to the producers themselves whether or not they want to go this route.
But you're not really giving them a choice if they come into the coalition for a reduced fee. You're actually extorting them to come into it.
That is how the state fee structure works.
Well, this is a new program. This hasn't worked this way before, at least here.
Correct. We are implementing this new program here, but when I talk a little bit about the next few slides and talk about the statewide requirements for agriculture, I can expound on
why the program is changing at this point, and kind of in addition to some of the points that Eli made earlier. I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
If there's an existing coalition, say down in Central Valley, and what I'm hearing is these coalitions are basically used for administrative purposes, for paper shuffling, basically. So if that's the purpose, then why couldn't we utilize, or the growers use, an existing coalition somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and just join up, pay the lower fee, and have a coalition, say, down in Modesto, be their representative, send in all their paperwork, and not have to utilize somebody up here that hasn't done it before.
Yeah, and I think that there would be an option right. for that. If we heard a lot from the producers that that was an option that they wanted available to them, we could probably make that option available when we're writing the requirements. It's not just a paper shuffling exercise, because there are requirements in the order that are monitoring reporting requirements that, in addition to the increased cost of fees, would be much more expensive for growers to implement on their own. So instead of some of these requirements for agriculture require that growers monitor their wells, and there's the option, if there's a coalition for representative monitoring, where instead of everyone monitoring their individual well, there's like two or three across the basin. And so again, it's economy of scale, and not just in the collection of the monitoring data, but in aggregating everything and reporting it and sending it into the lottery.
Understood, but we already do some monitoring here under Sigma.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that in a minute, because there's some opportunities to have that data collected through Sigma apply to some of these requirements.
Is there, we get through the presentation here and come back to all these questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did. Andy, real quick. It would help me, you're talking coalitions, fees, because a large landowner who has to be in part of this process, they can go it alone?
They can go it alone. Okay.
Having said that, there's a fee associated with that.
Yeah.
What's the difference in coalition? Is it two times the fee that structure they would need, three times the fee? What, you know, it's going to help you to know what that fee is.
It's significant. It's $38 an acre, around that, if you go it alone. It's around $1.50 an acre.
So you really are forcing people. Yeah. There's no decision.
That is.
Unless I'm pathetically rich and a billionaire and don't care, because I don't want government in my life here.
Right. Okay. That is the reality of that fee structure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That clarifies a lot. That's
everything. So I just have a simple question on that with fees, especially since he's talking about. So how does that work exactly for us, where we're curtailed the majority of the year? Do our producers get an even further discounted rate?
Well, so on that, we have facilitated, and Eli might be able to speak to this a bit better than I, but we facilitate discussions with producers up here and the free fee branch of the state board. They're the ones that set the fees. And so part of those discussions is, are we obligated to use that irrigated lands fee structure that the rest of the state uses, or are there other options available in this situation up in Siskiyou County? I don't know if, Eli, you want to say a bit more on that.
Yeah, I think, the irrigated lands regulatory program is really designed for agriculture in the Central Valley and in the Sinus Valley, which is very different from agriculture in the Scott Valley and the Shasta mm-hmm. Valley. So we've had conversations initially going back to 2023, 2024 with the fee branch about that particular topic to see what flexibility there really is. And the response they gave to us is, the formal stakeholder engagement program. That's how they give comments about fee schedules and set fee schedules annually. So we've plugged in producers and the Farm Bureau into that process so that they have the opportunity to advocate for, the uniqueness of agriculture up here. Because when I look at it, raising cows in Siskiyou County and alfalfa in Siskiyou County is very different from raising almonds, right? Or salad greens or anything like that, where you do have a larger nitrogen input, you do have a larger profit margin. It's different. So those conversations are ongoing and they're going to continue. But I think, what we've heard is there's the potential for a different type of fee schedule, but it's not something that they can guarantee right now. We're just trying to get people who are engaged out here to advocate for themselves, because we can only do so much from the regional board side. But I just want to let you all know that I recognize the difference between those two types of agriculture. So
thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, and actually that's a great segue into some of the things that I was going to talk about. So there are statewide requirements for agriculture that the state board directs the regional boards to implement into their agricultural regulations. These were adopted back in 2019. And as Eli said, you know, mentioned the Salinas Valley, the San Joaquin Valley, other areas of the state, these requirements were primarily adopted for those areas of the state with different agricultural systems, more intensive agriculture, and they primarily have to do with groundwater protection and the overapplication of nitrogen, again, in areas of the state where you have more intensive farming practices. You know, as you're aware, and as we just noted, the agriculture up here in Siskiyou County is very different. And so our job as staff over the next year as we're developing these regulations is to try to figure out how, what areas of discretion we have in implementing some of these requirements. Some of these we have to implement, and so our job is to try to figure out how to do that in a way that makes sense for this area and this style of farming. So I'll discuss them briefly, and then I just want to mention at the end some latest developments at the state board regarding these requirements and how that might affect this, you know, the development of our own regulations up here. So next slide. So as an example, for some areas of discretion that we do have, there's this requirement that farmers budget their nitrogen. And again, that is budgeting how much nitrogen they apply, how much gets removed through harvest. But we can exempt irrigated pasture where the only source of nitrogen is livestock manure. And I know that would cover a lot of producers up here and a lot of operations. And so, again, that's one area that we're working with state board to make sure we understand, you know, what we can implement and not. Next slide. Another example, unfortunately, where we don't have discretion is drinking water well testing. And so this requirement comes to us by way of the state water code. And this is for wells that are going to be on enrolled parcels. So again, only parcels that get enrolled in the order, so only parcels that have agriculture on them, and only for wells that produce water, drinking water for tenants, farm employees, and basically anyone other than a non-owner of the well or their family. And so that would requirement would be that that well would be tested for nitrate every year for 3 years, and then there's opportunity to have reduced monitoring after that if the well is under a certain level of nitrogen. Next slide. And then finally, we talked about representative monitoring, and we mentioned before that there's an opportunity that data collected under the SGMA monitoring may be used to fulfill requirements. And so Eli had mentioned having Siskiyou County staff and Laird Walker Associates on our technical advisory group, and part of that is figuring out how to layer those two sets of requirements so we're not duplicating those efforts. And, you know, it's obviously a cost saving. We'll get cost savings out of that. And so that monitoring, again, is focused on nitrate, but it allows growers, again, form together and pick representative wells instead of everyone having to monitor their own well. So quickly, I wanted to note that the state board recently convened an ag expert panel to reevaluate this approach, particularly how it's been kind of required and implemented statewide, and whether or not that approach still works for the different areas of California. Again, these requirements are largely based on Central Valley and Central Coast Salinas Valley type farming. There's different farming all over the state. There's what we have up here. There's nursery operations in San Diego. And so the kind of the issues in implementing these requirements as kind of a broad scale, broad brush approach has been called into question by different regional boards and different agricultural groups. And so there's an ag expert panel that is currently meeting this year to discuss this approach. And So we might get augmented requirements that come from the state that might be improved on what we currently have. We're not quite sure how that's going to line up with our order adoption schedule, but we're hopeful that, you know, we're going to get some clarity soon on that. So I'm going to get back over to Eli for the rest of the presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, there's just a couple slides left, so mostly timeline stuff. So we have a couple public outreach events which we're sort of kick it off. So, you know, you all have some more information to go back to your constituents with. We're also going to be having a town hall, two town halls, one in Fort Jones at the REC on February 4th at 5:30, and then one at the Montague Community Center the next day at 5:30. So we can talk to both communities and just sort of give them similar information, give feedback. And one thing that we really want to do is get out on the ground with folks that we haven't been on the ground with. Like I said, I've been on a good chunk of the big ranches in the Scott and Shasta myself, but a lot of the smaller ones, I really haven't. So if there's any support you all can do, so I can get out there with folks, you know, especially the Shasta Water Association area, you know, out in Gazelle, those areas I really haven't been to that much. And I think I want to show folks what this was going to look like on the ground, essentially, and be transparent about that. So happy to have any support on that. Next slide. So here's our proposed schedule for adoption as long as everything stays on tracks. Today is January 6th, board supervisor presentation, town halls in February, hopefully a whole bunch of farm tours during irrigation season, spring and summer of this year. We'll be releasing our drafts for public comment on October 2026 with a spring consideration for adoption. And that timeline, based off of, you know, feedback from folks at the TAG, we wanted to do the public comment period outside of the irrigation season. So folks wouldn't have to be basically working the ranch and then also having to worry about submitting public comments. We want to get that out of the way first and have public comment after the irrigation season. And that's pretty much it. So we're happy to answer any questions you all have.
Back to the board.
Professor Harris. So I got a couple of questions. What's your plan for producer to producer tailwater? So, you know, you end up with a chain of water use.
That's a problem that, you know, I was out on a couple of the down ditch parcels on SRWA talking to those folks a couple of years ago and just recognizing the size of their holdings, the amount of tailwater they're getting. We've been working with the Shasta Valley RCD through a contract to look at SRWA's infrastructure. They're working with LWA and Davis Engineering to think about modernization, what that looks like, but it becomes a community level problem, right? And so that's the intent of having an entire irrigation district enroll, is for them to look at this problem at the community level and understand how they're conveying water, maybe even how they're charging fees and structuring fees, and how that affects how water moves through the system. Another thing that we are looking at as the best management practice is sort of renaturalizing some of the wetlands out there that could process that tailwater before it gets to the river. If we can get tailwater, and I know there's not a whole lot of opportunity in that part of the Shasta Valley to be recharged, but if we can get that to go subsurface and hit that hard pan layer and move subsurface to the river, it's probably going to come in a lot more cooler and with a lot of the nutrients rubbed out water through that sort of saturated soil, you get denitrification, you get improvements in water quality. So I think there's some fairly simple low-tech solutions on sort of the community scale. That's kind of my approach. That's the way I've been looking at it. It's both through improvements of infrastructure through funding and then also looking at BMPs that can affect the rest of the excess tailwater.
And with San Francisco versus EPA, this creates kind of a precedent of protection for that end user, correct? Because they can't be held liable for everything that comes to them.
That's my intention, is not to have one person down ditch be responsible for everyone else's out ditch actions. They all have to work together.
Okay. Also, a couple things that tie into this. I really struggled when you're talking about sediments. Mm-hmm. State Water Board signed off, was okay with the dam removal. And that's more sediment than any farm road's ever going to put off. So I'm struggling with that a little bit. Just want to be very clear. Also, you guys talk about well testing and concern for nitrates, but at the same time, the state, I believe it was State Water Board, one of the schools came out with our illegal cannabis issue. and said, oh, well, you don't have to worry about pollution because the wells are, you know, X amount deep and it's slow penetration. So it's like we have two different things here. You know, you guys are expressing a concern for nitrates in wells at the same time that we're being told, oh, there's nothing to worry about over here.
Right. I understand that. And we have two different geographies too, right? The situation in the Scott with the alluvial soils are much different than what would be in sort of the east side of the Shasta. But it all comes down to like site-specific information, like what does the data show us? And is there even a problem? Because that's the data we need to see first. So we're hoping through coordination with the GSA, we can see what data is out there and then really get the scope of the problem. And sort of like, as Brenna was saying, we can understand what kind of leeway we have.
And is there any potential for the runoff from that area being basically the top of all of our agriculture affecting our producers downstream with testing?
That'd be really hard to say. I think the approach, and this may be something that others can speak to a little bit better, but I know the approach that's been suggested for that the contamination over there is soil testing first and understanding, do we have contamination in the soil? And then once we understand that, we can know the propensity for that to percolate down into the formation and, you know, affect the downgrading users. The one thing that I just really want to emphasize is the complex geology in that region. You know, it's really hard to predict where water infiltrates in, where it's going to pop out, how it moves through that system of the fractured basalt on the east side of the Shasta. So there's a lot of uncertainty there just with the geologic formation, but understanding what's in the soil first is just like any sort of, I used to do underground storage tank assessments, and the first thing we do is get soil borings and test for that, so we know what's the potential for that to move through the system.
Thank you.
So I don't know. I guess a lot of questions. We'll start off with, you know, is this a fish-centric program?
So the TMDLs speak to the cold water beneficial use, which is fish-centric. Yeah. So there is that element, but it's also just water quality protections as well. I don't know if you've been to Jones Beach in the last few summers, but there's postings for cyanobacteria there. That's exacerbated by the biostimulatory conditions listing. And when we're talking about nutrients moving through the system, that's what's feeding the algae. So it's not just about fish, it's also about public health. And that's also sort of the predicating factor behind the drinking water well testing is also a public health thing. I honestly have a lot of uncertainty about how much of applied nitrogen actually, how much nitrogen is actually applied in the stuff. You know, you're growing alfalfa there and you have irrigated pasture with cows. My suspicion is there's not much, right? Because you've got a nitrogen fixing crop and then you also have the natural deposition of manure, which is already exempt from some parts of the San Joaquin order. So I hope that answers your question.
Financially, the return's not there for that crop. It's ag like it is in the valley.
So with regard to dam removal when Cal Fish and Wildlife lost some 800,000 fingerlings, kind of went under the radar, but yet these new regulations pop out for ag and what they're supposed to be doing, you know, to be fish centric. Why wasn't there any outcry about the loss of that amount of fingerlings?
I think there was quite a bit of outcry, though I do think that, you know, I can't speak to the management practices of CDFW at that particular hatchery. You know, what I can speak to is the need for us to get good spawning gravels in the Scott, and that's related to sediment and ensure that the cold water refugia in the Scott and the Shasta are protected. You know, those are separate issues, right? How CDFW manages their stuff is separate from the impact.
Well, it's a water quality sediment issue as well.
My understanding of that, and you know, I understand where you're coming from, is that those fingerlings have gas bubbles because they went through a high pressure over, and I don't think there was a sediment issue there. I think, you know, the dam removal is a separate issue, and we've seen a lot of spawning upgrading from those dams.
So what role, if any, did the California Agricultural Land Equity Task Force have in implementing or giving input to this program?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. What effect does AB 263 reconcile with this program or not? We seem to be Siskiyou County, the Scott and Shasta system is seemingly unique compared to the rest of the state, but yet in this program, you're throwing us in with the rest of the state. Agriculture doesn't have as many months of the year to grow here as further south, and nothing against them, I get that. But I don't see how you apply, you know, the regulations that continue to come on the Scott and Shasta. Even though we're unique, we're not seeing a unique set of regulations that help offset our uniqueness.
So I can say that as the primary author of the current draft, it's very tailored to the Scott and Shasta and specifically the TMDLs. The only thing from the Central Valley that comes up are the precedential requirements that we're required to implement because of what the courts have said. Other than that, it's really focused on TMDLs and what needs to be done to support that plan.
So is the program, I don't know how to say this, is it policy or law?
So it springs from the California Water Code, which is law. And yeah, it's required through statute that we implement these sort of permitting programs for discharge of waste.
And how do you deal with, I'll call it illegal ag activity? There seems to be a focus on operators that can pay as they go versus an activity that is illegal and there's no oversight, no consequence to that illegal activity.
Yeah, I think Claudia is best suited to answer that question. She's the head of, the assistant executive officer for the cannabis division and our agriculture enforcement division. So speak to that because we have an actor up here.
And I'm not picking out any tag other than just illegal ag activity is the way I'm framing it.
Morning. Hear me? Yes. My name is Claudia Yacorta. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer and oversee our Agriculture and Enforcement Division, as well as our Point Source and Environmental Protection Division over at the North Coast Water Board. Maybe you can expand on your question, because I think...
Is there any focus on illegal ag activity, use of water in Siskiyou County by your agency?
We have not prioritized our focus on that.
But yet you prioritized on operators that can pay as they go.
We have prioritized based on water quality threats and risks. So if we have an illegal activity that is occurring in a topography that lends itself to create more runoff to a nearby stream of groundwater, and that risk is higher in that topography, which does not necessarily match Siskiyou County's topography, then we focus our very limited resources to those areas. So right now, our agricultural program started off with the cannabis program, and now has expanded to include all agriculture. Implementing our non-point source program, we have started identifying the specific commodities that we're going to regulate. We started with the vineyards, and we just issued a vineyard order to regulate that to provide with the non-point source policy. With the cannabis program, we do have an order in place, a statewide order. As you mentioned, we do focus on the Emerald Triangle and other counties in terms of our very limited resources. We have five cannabis inspectors to cover the entire North Coast region. So we definitely need to prioritize where we focus those resources where we have the highest water quality threat. And right now, based on our assessment, our water quality threat is highest in other counties, not necessarily in Siskiyou County. So we are now focusing that in general, not just cannabis in general, any other commodities as well for that reason.
And then I guess lastly, and I don't know if you'll answer it or Eli, So between state and federal grant or funding of any kind within the Scott and Shasta systems in particularly, I'm sure it's hundreds of millions of dollars at this point over 20 years. And yet we're still fighting the same battle about we're not seeing an increased number in fish. So how do we reconcile that yet we roll out another bureaucracy, is the only thing I can call this, for pay as you go, which, you know, these systems are already highly regulated, and yet they don't seem to get a benefit for what regulations are in place currently. So how do we measure the outcome for what we are actually going for here? Or is it still this, we move the goalposts every year just because, you know, we can?
Yeah, so I'm involved in multiple water quality monitoring efforts in both watersheds. We have a huge data set in the Shasta and building a larger data set in the Scott. And those are the metrics that I look at. Considering like our regulations are based around the water quality conditions to support beneficial uses. And so that's what we measure as our metric. There are a lot of factors that affect fisheries populations. I will say the Chinook run this year was particularly strong, and the Coho run this year is what we've seen so far. And I think those fluctuations are going to continue, and I hope we continue. We see an upward trend. And I think in some cohorts, I think we have seen an upward trend in Coho. And, you know, I hope that continues. Some cohorts of Coho, we see static or downward trends. And, you know, one of the strongest cohorts came up the drought year of 2014 and was decimated by those conditions. And so those sort of environmental conditions can create periodic fluctuations in fish returns. But again, I'm not a fisheries person. So measuring water quality conditions, measuring temperature, dissolved oxygen, understanding where the problems still exist, understanding how much tailwater is moving in the system, those are the things that we're going to be looking at in terms of measuring the success of this program. And that, you know, that's our charge, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
So is there an element, and this is my last question, I guess, is there an element that takes into consideration, for instance, the number of returning spawners that come into these two systems and the number of out-migrants, of whether that system is healthy or not? And I'm not trying to say that the tribes or the Pacific Coast fishermen, you know, that's on them, but I think there's a bigger element for fish return that goes further out. I think the international boundaries have been moved too close in, and our ag people are fighting that balance that they can't control, because we can only control the amount of out migrants that we get coming in. And never in the 20 years, coming on 20 years for me that I've been here, has that ever been a part of any regulation on these systems. Are they producing, for what's coming in, are we producing a significant amount of quality that shows that these systems are okay and that we should be looking at another element to this?
Yeah, and I think the Watershed Council, CDFW, I think CDFW calculates this, but small point counts is essentially the metric that you're talking about, is how many smolts per adult. Mm-hmm. So that data is collected and generated. And I just want to say, like, my focus is on the water quality conditions that ensure as much survival as possible of the juveniles.
Right.
And the ability for adults to move into the system and spawn. Those are like the two main
parts. All I'm asking is that amount of smolts going out should be part of your equation on how healthy the system is.
I'll take that into account.
Thank you. That's a good comment.
They've said pretty much more than what I've been thinking, but that last comment from Supervisor Kofsep is huge. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was headed, was we need to be considering what's going on outside of this system, as well as trying to keep our systems healthy, because that's huge. And I won't belabor that, because he said it perfectly.
I think what I can say to that, because, you know, my position with Scott and Shasta Watershed Steward, like, this is my focus. My focus is here, and I'm basically going to be here until I retire, so thank you, Ruby. But I'm involved in a lot of climate basin level stuff, like a climate fish health assessment team. You know, I pay attention to the fish counts up and down the river. I do that because I'm interested in the system, and we as an office see the climate as an integrated aquatic ecosystem from all the way in Oregon on, you know, south side of Crater Lake all the way down to the estuary. So that's our general office-wide management approach. And just our authorities are only in water quality. That's where our authorities lie. We don't have authorities over water rights. We don't have authorities over, you know, take of endangered species. It really is just water quality. But I collaborate across agencies. I'm very engaged with pretty much all the state and federal agencies that are working on this particular issue. So I try and stay as abreast of these things as possible and understand the dynamics across the entire system.
One thing I'll say is
you know, as much as we're trying to make improvement, the talking with our constituents and hearing the frustration and the pain that they feel every day when they go to work, and how much our economy suffers and these families suffer because of the legislation that we have to deal with. Their livelihood is in danger every day, and our county's economy is in jeopardy because of this layer upon layer upon layer of legislative, I'll say it, nonsense sometimes that we have to go through, and that keeps coming at us. And how we have to deal with this is sometimes ridiculous, when all we're trying to do is generationally continue what we've done forever. And it becomes overwhelming for our constituents. And how do we continue to do it when we've done it? Maybe not perfectly, but how do we make it better with the constraints that keep getting thrown at us is overwhelming.
Sure.
And we need to figure out how to do it better and how to be compensated for it when we're doing it the right way. And we're doing it well. And we continue to do better all the time. And honestly, where's the love, you know, at times when they should be shown grace and, you know, somehow be, you know, compensated or at least given a break for doing it well. You know, we've talked about this over and over again, out in the fields, out in Scott Valley. You've been there. I've been there. You know, how do these ag producers get some kind of break for doing really good work? And, you know, we've had these conversations over and over again, and they just keep getting devastated by it.
And I think that is part of the approach that I'm taking with this particular permit, because I've been on properties where people are having UC Davis out there studying their soil carbon, and different folks looking at you know, how much water they're actually harvesting from the landscape because of how they're operating their operation, massive, you know, habitat projects that are going across miles of river reaches. There's people who are doing exactly what we would want them to do under this permit already, and there's people who aren't. And I think there needs to be some leveling of the playing field so that folks who are doing this voluntarily really do understand, are held up as examples, right? And I'm actively working for ways where they can, you know, have that recognized within this particular structure. I can firmly tell you that I believe that agriculture and fisheries can coexist on the landscape and mutually benefit each other. And I think that's what we're trying to show with this permit, is there's a way to do that, and we'll get there. So
I'm just going to tag on to this real quick. Why, if you have producers that are operating just like you would want them under the program currently, why wouldn't you just give them I'll call it a stewardship program of some kind specific to them, and reward them with the dollar, whatever it is, per acre versus having to enroll? Why wouldn't you do that? Because that's incentive for the others to come in, where right now you're going to push the good actors out because they've been conforming with what you wanted for years, and then they get, you know, sucker punched because, you know, the state's rolling out a whole new program, when the state should actually recognize and credit those that have been doing what you exactly want and benefit them to the lower fee.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't support the fee at all, but sure, that should at least be at a minimum.
And I hear that comment, and I understand it. It's something I've been trying to figure out.
Thank you for being an advocate as best you can.
And I will say one thing that Brian McFadden told me when I first got this job was that the one thing that people in Siskiyou County do when they see a problem is they're rolled up their sleeves to try and fix it. And I've seen that out here. So thanks to those who are doing that, because they do show and they experiment with different practices. And that's how we learn what works, what doesn't, because I'm not out there farming every day. I'm not seeing how many fish come up my stream. They are. So I learned from that.
Thank you. I've been at this a long time, even with Big Ben. Not going to bore you with everything. I've got a ton of questions, but they're all pretty technical. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to probably handle a lot of them through letter through staff. I do have some highlights, though, that I want to ask you about regarding the TMDL for you, Scott. Listed for 792. There's been considerable work in the Scott on sediment. Where are we headed with TMDLs with sediment?
You know, there's a new thing that's hit the landscape in the Scott. It's catastrophic wildfire.
I was going to ask you then, how do you tease that piece out? Because my rancher shouldn't be suffering for a wildfire.
And they would not be responsible for that. They'd only be responsible for the roads that need to be maintained in a way that doesn't allow sediment to run off of them into streams and surface water. I am trying to figure out the wildfire sediment problem. I think it comes down to in-stream structures and gravel sorting and things like that. It's very technical, but I mean, French Creek currently has a sediment problem after seeing a whole lot of improvement. And I think, you know, the South Fork got hit really hard and East Fork got hit really hard. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out how we keep that sediment on the landscape and out of the stream. So that comes down more to restoration, but I also think that there's some landscape scale best management practices that people can implement to support that. I was working with AP Cattle before they decided to move on about what to do with the mountain fire. And we were talking about some voluntary restoration approaches, like certain things, but in-stream structures to gravel sort to, you know, increase floodplain connectivity so we get that sediment out on the landscape instead of in the stream on the gravels. So I think there's solutions, and one of the aspects of my job is finding funding for those sorts of projects so that they can be done with the support of the state as opposed to on the backs of the landowners who are, you know, they didn't start the fire, so it's been for some.
Oh, and bring up French Creek, opening up Sugar Creek. Something man can't fix. The geology there is unique. That decomposed granite has absolutely nothing holding it together. You can might as well stack up sugar, which is why sugar is a sugar creek, because it's going to run into the stream. I don't know a cure for it. It's very different than even the decomposed granite on the Plant Mason. Geologically, it's written about worldwide. I don't have a cure for that. I don't think you do either. Well, ranchers certainly don't.
Yeah, but we have seen active restoration efforts increase the amount of smolts produced on that stream over the last decade.
I understand.
Consistently. Yeah. So.
But I understand the dynamic there, too.
Yeah.
There was a huge decommissioning effort that took place.
Absolutely.
Right after the 92 listing. Fruitgar sold their intensive land practices in the valley. There's an NGO, you know, managing it right now long term with very low harvest occurring in Forest Service at that time. Back in 92, was harvesting anywhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 million more feet. And I currently struggle to get by them now.
Right.
So the landscape has changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that comes back to my original question. Where are we headed? TMDL, is there a cure?
So the responsibility of TMDL is focused on road-related sources and what's called discrete stream type features, which are basically bleeding scars in the stream. And, you know, we've included in our timber harvest plan process the requirement for companies to improve their arterial roads and the roads along the cuts. And we've improved thousands of miles of roads in the Scott. I don't have the exact number, but I did get it from our timber staff. So those are the mechanisms that we make these changes. It's through permitting programs and requirements. And I think we've done a pretty good job to address a lot of that road-related sediment. And I think the current gap really is, and I've been at all properties, I've seen this, is some private roads. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Moffat Creek, Upper Moffat Creek, and again, a geology problem. But if you build a bad road on bad geology, you have a bigger problem than if you could build a good road on bad geology.
Well, Moffat Creek's a story.
I got plans for Moffat Creek.
I'm going to I'm not going to deliver too much more, but I do want to go through the MPs. You mentioned the MPs. Unless things have changed, the largest landowner in Scott Valley did not have a BMP approved by the state
and
the National Forest Service.
They did have responsibilities under their permit, but that also was petitioned because the Forest Service wants a statewide permit. So that's kind of moving through a second process right now. But I think the last permit that we developed for them was a huge improvement over their previous waiver. But we'll see how that lands with the petition.
I guess my point is with non-point pollution sources, the only way to get at that is BMPs. And why is it taking 20 years for the state agency to come together to get BMPs in place?
For the Forest Service?
Yeah.
I'm not in the Forest Service program, but I think it is. They are also chronically understaffed, and that's one of the challenges that we've had with them. But I've seen the work that they did after some of the major fires in the Klamath when I first got hired in 2017. They did a lot of road work there. I think they've done a lot of road work in the East Fork in the last couple of years. It's looked really good to me. They've also been a lot more active with some of the venue projects than they were in 2017, 2018, 2019 recently, and all that comes with road related upgrades. So we're working with them, we're making it happen. But
I hope so. The reason I bring it up, I'm not trying to advocate because of my previous employment role, but I do bring it up primarily from the standpoint it hurts the county's economy. And just the added process of having to go through silvicultural waivers adds another layer of bureaucratic ballooning. The NGOs traveling or challenging all these projects that should get done in a timely manner, that delays them and also reduces fodder for the course.
Mm-hmm.
That directly affects our tax base and drives up the cost of implementation of the very nature of the work that needs to be done on the upland in the sky to manage both the water and the sediment coming off of it. It has to get done. And I don't appreciate my thumb on somebody to get that done so we can get that process streamlined. So any other comments I have, Eli, I'll be working with staff follow up on that. I'd like to see some of the trend data on the TMDL. And
part of the process this year is to develop a technical memo that lays out stats and trends in both watersheds. I have the Shasta stuff fairly at hand because I've been working on that data longer, but the Scott, we've been implementing the biosimulatory conditions monitoring starting in 2018, and we've got to mine a little bit of data going back, so there's some work to be done.
But okay.
Happy to share it with you when it's done.
Okay, and then if you're ever interested, I can point to half a dozen projects that need to be done.
Perhaps
like seven issues in the sky that seem to escape funding all the time. They never rise to the priority, but they're direct contributors to the side of the street.
Appreciate that.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you all.
Do you have public comment, maybe?
Yes. Look, hand up back here. You please come forward, please.
On this issue.
This is a question of
the before you start, let's state your name for the record, and then could you fill out a blue card when you're finished?
Yeah, I'm Ann Steinbring. I just had a comment about the water. I live in a low-income apartment complex, and I would just had to wonder because when I moved in 6 years ago, for some reason, God told me not to drink the water. And at every house I've ever lived in, I drank the water. Well, in this house, I've been going to the store and I'm buying a bottle of water now. I guess my only question is, do you guys have some kind of process where somebody comes in once in a while and checks your, the little things where you turn on the water in the sink? Is there anybody that comes in and checks that to make sure that you're not drinking bad water or something that you shouldn't be drinking?
Public system chance.
So do you call them or are the landlords supposed to do something like that? Or what do
you do? You could provide a comment in writing and we can address that because this isn't agendized. That's a different topic than what we're discussing right here. Be happy to provide the answers for you.
Okay, so I just give you guys, like, write it down and give it to you, or when do I come for the answers?
You can either submit it online or you can write us a separate letter. All our emails are there.
Oh, is there another day when we can talk about it here?
Not unless it's agendized.
Oh, well, how do I get it agendized?
You can submit a request to me, the board chair, and I'll put it in for consideration.
Just had one other question.
Here's an email.
I'm willing to volunteer to do a soup kitchen here in the town. I don't know how to bring this up or when it's appropriate to bring it up or get an answer for it. So I just had to walk in here, sorry, and interrupt your whole day. But I'd like to give you guys my information today and just leave it here with somebody that's appropriate. And then, okay, I will do that for you. But I just later, whenever you have time, hopefully you'll give me a call, but I'd like to volunteer to start up a soup kitchen and stuff like that we used to have here.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just to comment on the last presentation, one of the things that would be critical for me to know is to have Farm Bureau cattlemen and producers here giving us comment on this program. That would be helpful.
Thank you. Any comment online on this topic?
Surely not online.
Okay. If she wants to write.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say if she wanted to write some information on that note, we'll get it to you.
Okay. You good to move on?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Moving on to item 8A, county administration.
Good morning. Haley Hudson, deputy county administrator. This item is part of the county's 20-year retiree recognition program, and in light of Rick Dean's retirement, the county wishes to extend its congratulations and gratitude for 32 years of dedicated service and many contributions to the community, and to present Rick with this proclamation and a token of our appreciation.
Great. Mr. Dean, come forward. Thanks for the read, into the record. Richard Dean. Whereas Richard Dean was devoted nearly 33 years of distinguished service to Siskiyou County, including a remarkable 33-year career marked by dedication, integrity, and steadfast commitment to public service. And whereas Rick Dean began his county career in environmental health, steadily advancing to a wide range of roles and responsibilities, ultimately serving as Director of Community Development, where his leadership and experience significantly strengthened county operations and services. And whereas throughout his career, Rick consistently demonstrated a deep commitment to serving county residents and providing thoughtful, practical solutions to the best of his ability, guided by a strong sense of responsibility to the public good. And whereas among his proudest professional accomplishments is the development of a productive workplace culture, fostering employees who care about their work and the public they serve, leaving a lasting positive impact on both staff and community. And whereas one of his most memorable moments of service includes participation in the McKinney Fire reconnaissance, exemplifying dedication, calm leadership, and service during times of crisis. And whereas Rick offers enduring words of guidance for current and future county staff to maintain a high road at all times, to work to dissolve self, to strive to make common sense common, and to know and understand who you work for, the residents of Siskiyou County. And whereas upon retirement, Rick looks forward to new adventures and personal pursuits, including getting back to the church. Discipline practice of Ayubu?
Chido.
Okay. Thank you. And embracing adventures on the fly, marking a well-earned transition to the next chapter of life. Whereas Rick expresses deep gratitude for the opportunity to serve Siskiyou County, extending sincere appreciation to the Board of Supervisors and the County Administrative Officer and reflecting on the complete professional journey filled with diverse experiences that fostered personal growth. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize, honor, and commend Rick Dean for 3 decades of exemplary public service, leadership, and dedication to the residents of Siskiyou County, and extends their sincere appreciation and best wishes for a fulfilling, happy, and adventurous retirement. Passed and adopted unanimously by the Board of County Supervisors at a regular meeting of the said board held on the 6th day of January 2026. Anything to say?
Well, yes, I do. Above all, thank you. This is an opportunity for me to offer my gratitude more than anything. Whoever wrote that, it's for the top, for the top. Gratitude for my bride, Tammy Dean, keeping me grounded and on a steady foundation for quite a while. If it wasn't for her, I'd be out in the desert kicking rocks right now. But first and foremost, the private sector of our county, I'm grateful that I've been able to serve the best I could for her. Obviously, we have a lot of crazy regulations to try to disseminate amongst our populace to a challenge oftentimes. I often say that my superhero, quite frankly, is someone in Siskiyou County in the state of California that employs one person. Very difficult to do. And try to honor to the best of our ability and support the private sector. Internally, the staff has been amazing. Finding department, Haley Lang, James Phelps, Rachel and Bernadette, Charlton Hart there, building department under Glenn Shockensy is doing really well. Environmental Health is in a good spot. Lisa Flagg, amazing person, at my back the whole time. Really appreciate that. Counterports and crime. Sheriff Bloom. You've done an awesome job, Steph, and OES. A couple notches under his direction. We appreciate that. And to the board, department heads. Suarez Valenzuela, early on, I just want to thank you. I get a phone call from you just out of the blue, just there and say, hey, how's it going? Probably have the least amount of calls from your district, but you being proactive like that really made a big difference, especially starting out. Really appreciate that. Supervisor Ogren, you know, we talk about you. If you're going somewhere, she's already there. So just be ready to greet her.
I'm a pest.
Yeah, McKinney Fire jumped in the rig. We went down and do some investigation on that. And I will not forget this. Driving down 96 and seeing this wonderful house in the middle of a firestorm, still standing. We're just elated. Oh my gosh, one made it. When the turn there on Walker Creek coming back, and just watch that burn to the ground in like 15 minutes. Just devastating. Our Crawford King going just there. And thank you for being
thank you.
Deeply involved. Supervisor Hout, how the story is. Every time I drive by Scott Bar, I'm going to be looking at that rock out there and see you standing on it. But just the willingness to jump in the truck and go walk the holes and slides and things like that. Just be very proactive. Thank you very much. Supervisor Harris, not a lot of history yet. Wish you all the best. A lot of challenges ahead that we face. Supervisor Kopseff, got our sanity calls on Fridays. Calls, yeah. Seems like something's always happening on Friday.
Always.
Yeah, but really, appreciate your dedication to the private business, standing up for whatnot. See you.
Thanks for being here to help us solve problems and issues. Yeah. And I just want to give a special shout out to code enforcement. Andrea Fox and John Otberg have been amazing with the program. Thank you very much. It's been extreme pleasure working with you and working for you. And I was extremely intimidated coming into this position. Watch out, the board of supervisors will tear you up. Yeah, okay. But I found that you're fully human. Do all you can to try to do the best you can for our community, for constituents. There's a lot of work that goes into it, a lot of time. Attending crazy parties, and that's all this kind of accolades you have to have. So, sincere, heartfelt gratitude. You kindly.
Sure, the board has some things to say to you. Start.
Well, I'll start it off. Rick, I just can't thank you enough for all that you've done for this county. You know, Rick is one of those department heads that will answer the call anytime I call. Anytime I did call, always reluctantly try not to call after five, if you will. There are times when I did, you always answer the phone or call back. I can't thank you enough how well the department's running right now. You left it in a really good spot. Just want to tell you how much I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything, for all the long phone calls and all the information and helping me get started and teaching me a lot and hanging out at the other office.
Yeah.
And all your hard work and your caring and your compassion for people. It's been, you've helped a lot of people. Haley's got big shoes to fill.
She'll do fine.
She'll be fine.
Sure. So, thank you for all the great work you did. I mean, you were always a phone call away, even when you were traveling, and I didn't know it. You know, and then I go, wait a minute, if you're on vacation, I don't want to answer the phone. But he would. So, I mean, you did great work. And I know that, how do I say, a lot of unique circumstances have come up over the years, and you've taken them head on. And sometimes it was a workaround, sometimes it we needed to change something to make it actually work, but I appreciate your cooperation in that and always, you always had an answer to something. Your knowledge base on what used to happen in the past, bringing it forward because of X, Y, or Z was, you know, incredible for me to be able to tap when it was needed. Because, you know, that's why we had those sanity calls, because these issues that would come up was just like, who would ever dream something like this could come up? And yet you always took it head on. So I appreciate that greatly. I appreciate, you know, you even having a replacement for yourself. A lot of departments don't have that. They just, you know, that's not a criticism. They, you know, they leave and then we're kind of floundering for a little while until someone services. But you've made that an ease of transition as well. So can't thank you enough. Well done.
Well, I've been very blessed, you know, with Glenn and Haley, Eminence, and James. Just, ask for it and it shows up. So it's more than just me at work there. I'll save it up.
I just want to say congratulations on a very impressive career. Watching you handle adversity and the stress of the job and the things that you had to deal with, especially in these last few years and through the year that I've been here, you've handled it like a champ, and I think that's set a good example for your team and a good example for everyone else, and you will certainly be missed.
Thank you, sir.
First, I have to apologize.
Apologize, yeah.
For the endless questions and tying you in knots. Remember, I was out barbecuing and thought of something. Mr. Dean, and he'd give me the textbook answer, and I always said, yeah, but how can we get this done? and you found a way. I honestly think I'm proud to call you my friend. We developed a really good relationship working on fires and fire recovery, and I'll forever call you the mayor of Happy Camp. The people down there do too. For constituents, my constituents love to know this, but countywide, Rick epitomizes public service. You are truly a servant of the public. You turn yourselves inside out to get things done for people, to lessen the impact government has on their life. And I truly appreciate that. And I know those who know you do too. Leave a big hole. This is the day I didn't want to see. But I'm happy for you. Going forward, looking at the previous people in your position, there was always a room for improvement with whoever stepped in next. But Haley, he's leaving you in great shape. You have turned that department around. I can go to the lumberyard now and not be tied up in a building over there, you know, discussion for hours.
Mr. Chimes,
really proud of what you've done with the building department, with the electronic processing of things, the standardized permits for housing. A couple more I wanted to work on, though, with you that we didn't get a chance to, but I'll get Haley going forward. I wish you all the best, Rick, and the best of health in the coming years, and get to know your wife again. commit more time to her, because I'm sure she's going to enjoy the next few years having me back.
So
thank you. Thank you so much for your service to the county.
Thank you all.
Mr. Chair, before presentation, let's officially take action to adopt it.
Okay. I'll make the motion to recognize him.
Second, his retirement.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Absolutely.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
And Supervisor Howell. Thank you much.
There you go.
We take a break.
10 minutes for.
Right.
The board of reconvene. We are going back to item 6F. Tim and somebody online to answer to the verbal process.
Okay. Correct. Through the chair, Angela Davis, County Administrator. I believe we have Don Walton online that will be answering the questions from Supervisor Kopseff.
Are you there?
Europe. Anna, do you want to give her the instructions to there she is.
This is Madam Chair, Board of Supervisors. This is Dawn Walton with Public Health.
Supervisor Cobbs, I've asked some questions for you.
So on the item 6F, on the one page that has each county local health jurisdictions. Siskiyou County is listed in the amount of allocation that must support CBOs is $28,380. That CBO is a community-based organization. What community organization would this funding go towards?
At this point, we have not picked a CBO or a nonprofit health care provider. This budget is due in March, and our first step was getting the approval from the board to move forward with this allocation. We will have to do an RFP for this, as it is $28,380 per year that must go to a CBO or a nonprofit healthcare provider.
And is that provider, would it be in Siskiyou County only, or is it
yes.
any provider can?
It must be within Siskiyou County. It is a local
CBO. And so what organizations potentially could there be because this is a public health grant for sexually transmitted infection and prevention and collaboration?
Correct. I am not sure which CBOs have anybody's reached out to at this point. Again, it was just starting this, getting the approval from the board to move forward to start the process of this grant and move forward with a CBO or a nonprofit for
and
STI.
So if you don't have, once you go out for RFP, if you do not have any replies, does this nullify the grant if you can't award this?
There is a section in the grant that says, let me pull that up real quick, sorry, that we can fill out a documentation is submitted that we were unable to select a CBO, and we can ask for a reduced rate or a reduced allocation.
A reallocation of those funds?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for the information. I'm not to the point where I can. I get that this may be awarded, but I'd like more information on how this could be awarded, I guess, locally to the CBO. So I'm going to abstain on this vote.
Would it be more that you need the scope of work for the RFP?
No, I'm more interested in what, what type of an organization in Siskiyou County that's a CBO that could fill this role.
So, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Do we have the opportunity to approve the award once it gets bid and you pick one?
Well, right now we have to submit that we're accepting the award. The acceptance of the award has to be submitted by March 27, along with the budget. And in the budget, it does not require us to put in the CBO that was selected at that time, just the budget stating that. And then we would work on the process of doing an RFP to select that CBO, which would have to go to the board as who was selected and who we're going with.
So if we approve the budget, the award, we still have the option of approving who the money would go to.
As an RFP, correct.
Okay, thank you.
We would approve the RFP?
Well, an RFP goes through the county process.
The contract, once.
And the contract, right, once
here?
It's.
I don't think so.
The contract does, because it will be over $25,000.
Our county administrator can answer.
The Davis, the county administrator. But due to the amount of the allocation, it would require to come back to the Board of Supervisors for approval for that vendor. However, are you stating, Don, that you that is the process that you will implement, that it will come back to the board for signature?
As an RFP and a contract over $25,000, that contract has to go to the board, because it's $25,000. It's $28,000 per year for 5 years that the contract would be for.
So okay, that helps.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, that helps a lot. Thank you.
It does, because you clarified that it's the term of the contract. Yes.
Yes.
The board.
Move to approve.
I'll second now that I've got clarification on how that's going to work.
Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Ogrin?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
And Supervisor Health?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item 9A. The status of the emergency due to the presence and impact of gray wolves in Chesapeake County. Welcome.
Joanne Johnson, project coordinator for county administration. Just a quick update for you. According to the wolf liaison, there's been 3 depredations since this proclamation was originally signed. And at that same meeting.
Confirmed what?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And at that meeting, the idea was brought up to add some sort of wolf signage in the areas with the most wolf activity. And I've been working with Garrett Richardson and Supervisor Harris on adding those signs. And I've also reached out to Caltrans to start the conversation about adding a sign to the rest area along 97.
Who comes in?
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry.
And this was to extend, correct?
Yes.
And Harris, thank you. All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogrin?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Thank you.
Recess the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors convened as a flood control and water conservation district. So, this is a do any public comment? Is there any public comment in the room? Seeing none. Any online?
Showing none online.
None online. And item B, consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Sure.
Director Ogrin?
Aye.
Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Howe?
Aye.
Item C, minute approval.
No changes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Ogrin?
Aye.
Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Howe?
Aye.
Well, during the Siskiyou County Flood and Water Conservation District, convening the Siskiyou Power Authority, public comment. Any house any online?
Showing none online.
Then the minute approval is in the second.
No changes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Ogrin?
Aye.
Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Howe?
Aye.
During the Siskiyou Power Authority, convene the County Service Area 3, public comment. None in room, any online?
Showing none online.
Online minute approval?
No changes.
Or B and C, we take them together?
Yes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Was it here on the 9th? Was that the one I wasn't here on? Is that the one we had over stage?
No, the second was at stage.
Okay, so I need to back up.
Okay, just like item B first then.
Yeah.
So we'll do December 2nd first. Okay. Supervisor or Director Valenzuela?
Yeah.
Director Ogrin?
Aye.
Director Kopsa?
Abstain.
Okay. Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Hill?
Aye.
MC.
Move to approve.
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Ogrin?
Aye.
Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Hill?
Aye. During County Service Area 3, you can convene as County Service Area 4. Quick comment. None in house, any online?
Showing none online.
None approval, December 9th.
No changes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Ogrin? Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
And Director Help?
Aye.
Adjourned County Service Area 4, convene in-home support services public facility comment in-house. None, any online?
Showing none online.
Online item B, minute approval, December 9.
Yep, no changes there.
Can you agree?
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Yes.
Director Ogrin? Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Harris.
Aye.
And Director Howe.
Aye. During in-home sports services authority, reconvening the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors, appointments, item 15A, County Clerk.
Got a few appointments here. The first one we have is a vacancies on the Callahan Water District. These are both terms ending December 3rd, 2027, as well as December 7th, 2029. And we need three people appointed in order to create a quorum. In the clerk's office, we did hear from the district. Linda Collins, Hope Evans, and Cheryl Hayden are all interested in reappointment.
Move to appoint
three of them. All right, Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Kalman.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay.
This order.
Rest of them here.
Item B.
Okay. All right. This is one that we bring every 4 years. These are scheduled vacancies on seven different cemetery districts, and I have heard from the majority of the districts and who is interested in reappointment.
You'll take the one by one? Or?
I wouldn't mind doing them all one, and then if we can continue the ones that I still need people for, that would be great.
Your pleasure.
So basically, let me put on the record, we have Aetna Cemetery, three vacancies. I've heard from Peggy Whipple and Jeannie Dickinson that they are interested in reappointment. Fort Jones Cemetery, one vacancy. Sherry Glendenning is interested. Happy Camp Cemetery, three vacancies, and Dion Wood is interested in reappointment. Henley Hornbrook Cemetery has two vacancies. Bryant Schaufler and Jaron Schellner are both interested in reappointment. Lakeview Cemetery, two vacancies with Aaron Chris and Janet Lutz interested in reappointment. Picard Cemetery has two vacancies. Shelley Baldwin and Gary Craddock are both interested in reappointment. And Shasta Valley Cemetery District has two vacancies. Jackie Twilliger and Donna Bacigalupi are interested in reappointment. And if we could have those all in one motion is fine with me, if we can continue the ones that still need people to fill to a later date, that would be great.
I'll make the motion.
Great, thank you.
Second.
Righty.
Motion and second.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
Righty.
Item C, Siskiyou County Law Library.
Okay, Law Library Advisory Board. This is an annual appointment. The terms are 1 year, so that would be a term expiring December 31st of 2026. There are three vacancies, but I've only heard from one person, and that is John Quinn. He is interested in reappointment, and if we could continue the others to a later date, that would be great.
Move to approve John
Mr. Quinn?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Second.
All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren? Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe.
Aye. The MODOC Siskiyou Community Action Agency Board of Directors.
Yeah, the MODOC Siskiyou Community Action Agency, MISCA, Board of Directors. This is a term ending December 31st of 2029. I do have the one appointment available, one vacancy, and I did receive a letter of interest in continuing from incumbent Keith Bradley.
Second.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor House.
Aye.
Item E.
Okay. So
behavioral health.
Yeah. So for behavioral health, we have four scheduled vacancies. These are terms that are going to be ending December 31st of 2028. They are 3 year terms. We did our normal posting, of course, and the clerk's office received letters of interest in remaining on the BHS board from incumbents Earl Chancellor and Paul Contreras. And if we could continue the other two in case we find somebody else.
Move to reappoint and continue the other two.
Thank you.
Second.
All right. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
I believe that is it for me, except for minute approval.
Minute approval. And in 16, I think we can take
all but two. Two separately. The second.
Yeah. We can take B, C, and D together.
Yeah, I'd move to approve 9th, 15th, and 16th.
Second.
So 9, 15, and 16. Supervisor Kopsev, mm-hmm. Supervisor Haupt, correct? Mm-hmm. All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. Move to approve December 2nd.
Well, I'm sorry?
Move to approve December 2nd.
All righty. And the second? Thank you. All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev?
Stain.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
And through the chair and to the clerk, I don't know, on the December 2nd for Siskiyou Power Authority, I should be abstained. Do we have to go back into that to do that? Or can we record it because I wasn't present?
Siskiyou Power Authority?
Yeah, it was on the 2nd that there was a minute approval.
Down to the Davis County Administrator, I think to be as clean as possible, we would go back.
Okay.
And
all right. I don't want to mess up the record.
No, and that is
all right.
I think what I would suggest.
Sorry.
Power Authority.
We did that one.
I know, but it's also number two.
Yeah.
Number
two.
Did you abstain?
I did.
You did on that one? Okay. Yes. Just making sure. So I'm sorry.
Back to you in the Siskiyou County Power Authority and motion made for the December 2nd.
Yes.
So this is all righty. So the December 2nd Siskiyou Power Authority minutes, we want to cancel the first vote and do it again.
We need to formally rescind that. I believe it'd be appropriate. The motion to rescind the previous vote.
Make a motion to rescind the previous vote.
Second.
We need a second for the rescind. Harris? No? Ogre? Thank you. I see hands. I'll go.
I'll make the motion. Harris made the second.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to do this more than once. I just realized that I wasn't here on the second either. So.
You're sorry.
That's right. Yeah. I just,
that is correct.
No, let's get through this one.
Yeah. We're going to get practice ready.
So we have Siskiyou Power Authority, December 2. We're going to rescind the original motion. That's what we're at right now. Okay. Director Valenzuela.
Yeah.
Director Ogren.
Aye.
Director Kopsa.
Aye.
Director Harris. And Director Haupt.
All right.
Now to approve.
So not to belabor this, but doesn't the original motion maker have to rescind their motion, not me.
Aren't you you're not the original motion maker? Okay.
Who was it?
Will you please clarify this?
Yes. Siskiyou Power, the original motion maker was Kopsev and
okay,
Valenzuela.
So I motion to withdraw.
I'll withdraw that too.
The two that weren't here.
So I'm motioning to withdraw my
motion.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
And I need a second to that.
Second.
And that was Valenzuela.
Okay.
We're
going to go for a minute.
Yes.
Did we need a vote, though, for that one?
Yeah, you need a motion.
Okay.
Motion.
No, I'm saying for the original rescind.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
The original rescind with the two correct.
Yeah, we'll
correct.
Okay.
You might get to 5 o'clock tonight.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Well, it's standing for everything now.
Yes.
I get to be correct.
I thought we just voted on that.
No, that was no good.
That's another,
That was no good.
What are we voting on now?
Your motion.
To your original?
Rescind.
To rescind.
Okay. Withdraw. Okay. All right.
Okay. So Valenzuela. Sure. Ogren.
Aye.
Director Kopsev.
Aye.
Director Harris.
Aye.
Director Howe.
Aye.
Okay. Now we've rescinded that one.
Correct.
Now to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. Director Valenzuela.
Abstain.
Thank you. Director Ogren.
Aye.
Aye.
Director Cobsa.
Staying.
Yeah. Director Harris.
Aye.
Director Cobb.
All right. I just do that for the rest of them, Wendy. That's all I got to do on the record.
All right. So we will now adjourn the Siskiyou Power Authority and reconvene in the Siskiyou County Service Area 3 and reconsider item B, unit approval for December 2nd.
Okay, let me find the original.
What's the original motion maker?
CSA 3 original was Valenzuela and Cobbstep.
So we're going to make a motion to rescind that, right?
Second.
Correct.
Okay. Director Valenzuela. Yeah. Director Ogren. Director Cobsa.
Aye.
Director Harris. And Director Hell.
Aye.
Now to approve.
The motion to approve.
Second.
All righty. Director Valenzuela.
Abstain.
Thank you. Director Ogren.
Aye.
Director Cobsa.
Abstain.
Director Harris.
Aye.
And Director Hell.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. During Siskiyou County, starting at 3. Before we do it on the rest of them.
I believe.
What about yes. The minutes we will be the board on the 2nd?
I think we 16. Did. We haven't done that yet. No, we did.
Yeah,
we did the 2nd separate from the 9th, 15th, and 16th.
And on that one. Instead of
okay. So for 12-2 to rescind was Haupt and Harris.
Yeah, for the board?
Yeah.
So sure. We can do that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, this will clarify my question.
Okay. We will reconvene as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. We go back to item.
It's the 12th, December 2, minutes approval.
Plus the birds of human.
16.
Okay. So back to 16. Reconsider December 2nd. Who is the motion maker?
Haupt and Harris.
I will rescind my previous to approve.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Just to rescind.
To rescind.
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsa.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt.
Aye.
Okay, now to approve the 12-2 minutes.
Make a motion to approve, except for a second.
Thank you. Second?
Okay.
Oh, thank you. All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Abstain.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsa.
Abstain.
Thank you. Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Helm.
Aye.
Yeah.
I believe we've got them all.
All right. Let's get them for I will go back to 17, public hearing.
I am up again here. Give me just a sec.
County clerk.
This is a continued public hearing. We had originally did the first reading and it was approved. This is back for the second reading. This is increasing the county clerk's fees to match the state increase for charges to the certified copy of confidential marriage licenses.
That's the presentation of staff report.
That would be the staff report.
Presentation of correspondence.
Nothing at the clerk's level.
Presentation of reports, arguments, or evidence by staff of the county departments. None. Proponents' arguments. None. Proponents' arguments. Seeing none. Public comment. Seeing none in-house, any online?
Showing none online.
Rebuttal by proponents. By proponents. And I'm closing this hearing.
We can close it. Okay. This is the second. Yep.
Close the hearing, bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion by the board?
Move to approve.
Second.
The motion and a second.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Thank you. Back.
Brings us to board staff reports.
Pass.
Pass it. Hello.
Pass.
Pass.
Yay!
With that, the board will win the closed session. Yes. Assistant County Board of Supervisors, reconvene open session, and council, if you have a report out and close.
Board of Supervisors went into a closed session at 11:20 a.m. and came out of session at 12:13 p.m. Reportable action on agenda item 18A. It was moved by Supervisor Kopsev and seconded by Supervisor Okern, with no supervisors, with all supervisors voting yes, no supervisors voting no, to approve the settlement agreement, delegate authority to the CAO to execute the agreement in the matter of Scott Brannigan versus Siskiyou County, which is pending before the Superior Court at 25 CB 0176. There were no other reportable actions in closed session.
Thank you. The only other business I'd like to close today in memory of U.S. Congressman Greg LaMalfa. God rest his soul.